One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
This is 4 Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, the following podcast is Wrestling Death and is scheduled for 1 hour. Maybe more. It has no real time limits making their way into your ears. First, from a place called Garniston, he is the Pyramid.
It's going to be the funniest podcast out there, because that's what I'm all about, baby. The comedy and the money.
And his partner, Fede Tappender Stevenson.
From Mexico City to Beef Community Center, I've got stories that are going to blow your mind.
Oh, that's right. It's time for Wrestling Daft. It's the best time of the week. You're driving home for your shitey job. And you're listening to us. And this is your job.
Or they might
this
go,
podcast.
They might go on their way.
Or they might go on your way. If you're working a night shift, or you're working your night shift up at the geriatric hospital, wiping their arses. Wiping the shite after arses. Well, we're sitting in here doing our podcast. My name's Rav Florence. And of course, out here, the bold and beautiful. You say your name, mate. You might say your name.
Gredo.
It's Gredo. It's the man himself. You know, I was just thinking about the intro there, right?
Aye.
Obviously, I get announced first, right? Which is like a thing you want. It's in the telly and entertainment game, you're like, I want to be announced first. But then this is a wrestling thing. You don't want to be announced first.
No,
it's the big name. It comes out second.
Aye.
It's like, I'll bring Rab out first and then we'll get everybody all amped up for Gredo coming out.
Aye.
I've just realised that.
It's I don't like that. It's in, you know what I mean? It's embarrassing. I'd rather you go first. You're the kind of vet when it comes to, you know, telly stuff.
I mean, don't be like, media. You're like, no, you sound like here with this part, or you sound like Hogan when he gets interviewed.
Aye.
And he's like, you know, he's talking about, this is why he put his cell over.
Nah,
like, it was me. I sold all the tickets. Thanks for the host, Gredo.
Aye, neighbor.
Welcome to the show, everybody. Oh, man, this is episode 5. Can you believe that? We're 5 weeks in already.
Time flies, Biggin.
Time flies. 5 weeks in already. And we have got an amazing show lined up for you. We've got an amazing guest as well.
Doug Williams, the ambassador of British wrestling. A guy who I look up to. A guy who I've wrestled. A guy that every UK wrestler should respect and adore. And if there's any fans that are just new to wrestling that might not know Dougie Williams, go back and watch him, because he's absolutely flawless. Flawless wrestler. I wrestled him once in London at the Coco in London. What a venue. It was brilliant. It was like the kind of Manhattan ballroom, the way it was all
beautiful.
Set up. The only problem was I was struggling. I feel as if I talk about shite quite a lot, but I had a colonoscopy the next day, you know, a camera to be getting put up my bum. So I had just started taking this powder that was basically flushing everything out. So I was quite scared wrestling that match that I'd maybe shit myself.
So you had to be tensed.
Aye. I had to be very tense, and also try to remember what me and Doug were going to do. It was battling. Did I tell you a story about the colonoscopy? I think I have in a show.
You've told it in an episode.
Oh, fuck, I have.
You want to tell it again, mate? 5 episodes in, it's back.
I'm rehashing the stories.
Rehashing the part about, he loves this colonoscopy story. Last week after we finished recording, we were going down in the lift, and he was like, I need to tell you about this colonoscopy I got once.
Oh, fuck, I can't remember.
But I must have, if you were tensing up your ass all the way through that match, it must have really been a problem, because there's a lot of wrestling moves, isn't there, where you need to have a really relaxed arse to do it.
But
like a Styles Clash, you need to have, you don't tuck your fucking chin for the Styles Clash, and you keep your ass relaxed. Your ass cheeks need to be really relaxed.
Aye,
to take that.
So you could fucking, there could be a potential for somebody's face to be caked in shite.
Who were you wrestling? Were you working this weekend?
Aye, I wrestled on Friday night. I wrestled Red Lightning at Paisley. It was
Rudo.
Brilliant. Aye, Rudo wrestled him.
How did that go?
Aye, it was the last time
you wrestled him?
Oh, a good cut. Well, no, we wrestled each other early in the year in Aberdeen, but he was a guy that I wrestled quite frequent when I first started.
Aye.
After the Vice documentary, it was me and him, so we know each other well, but there was a time where, Oh, God, the both of us. I mean, many of us are in the shape of our lives, but it was one point where we were wrestling and we said to ourselves, we're just like a pair of slobs rolling about the ring and nobody's giving an absolute fuck. We were. Me and him, I remember one show we were so used to doing, we're kind of gaga, and this night in Kilmarnock, we said to ourselves, no, let's actually try and wrestle tonight. Let's actually go for it. As I say, talk about a couple of guys, a couple of slobs rolling about the ring and nobody giving a fuck. That was it. And I remember, man, we're backstage going over with what we were going to come up with. And, you know, he's in his cagoule, over his leotard, with a fag in his gub. You know, we're in a toilet. Right, we'll do this pet. Right, we'll spin out for a pedigree to rock bottom. You know what I mean? He's got his cagoule and a fag in his gub. Put me in a pedigree in this toilet and folk are walking in. And I'm like, sorry, mate. Just get another match. You know what I mean? It's fucking horrific. Sad.
We need to get him on the show. And that was your only match this weekend?
Aye, sorry, that was my only match, mate.
Only one match?
Aye. Only.
You're getting lazy, mate.
It's because of the panel, mate. I can't. I don't want to be doing too much because I'm... Honestly, the pantomime is a graft.
Your sweetie throwing arm, you need to protect it. You need to protect your wee fruit salad and wee blackjack throwing arm. Listen, by the way, last day of week, if you remember, right? I've got no news, really. Do I have any news? I'm trying to think if I have any news. Oh, I do. By the way, I do have news. As this goes out on the Friday, I'm not telling you when we're recording, it's a secret, right? But it goes out on the Friday at 3:16. That night, the State of It, my new teleprogramme is on.
Is it on BBC Scotland?
BBC Scotland, half 10. It's on iPlayer as well. Watch it, The State of It. It's on for 6 weeks, a comedy show. You'll like it. There's lots of wrestling in it.
Is Ian Connell in it?
Hey, by the way, Rudo's in it.
Is he?
Red Lightning's in it.
Is he?
Ian Connell isn't in it, no. Ian Connell's career's done.
Have you patched him, aye?
He's done.
Have you patched him?
You know, I've Marty Jannetty'd him. He's right through the fucking barbershop window at Ian Connell.
So what's he then? Just sitting his house, picking his ass?
It's just sitting about like a big... Just his own fucking Twitter and all that and Facebook, just tweeting out old Burniston sketches, you know what I mean? Moving on. Remember we were talking about seeing wrestlers in weird places? Andrew Gilchrist got in touch with us. You know, big Andy Gilchrist.
Oh, how you doing, Andy boy?
Big Andy Gilchrist. I'm sure he went out with my wee sister, Andy Gilchrist.
Did he?
I'm sure he did, aye. He says, I don't know if this counts. We don't fucking bother sending us it in. But after ICW Fear and Loathing, we went to Cat House to watch Survivor Series and my mate gets steaming. What? Oh, he's fucking, it was his mate that did it as well. It's not even Andy Gilchrist that did it, it's his mate.
They were showing wrestling in the Cat House.
His mate gets steaming, walked up to Joe Hendry and said, Joe, you're my third favourite wrestler. That's the story. Andy Gilchrist. My wee sister was right to dump you, mate.
Andy, we've got to get a second chance. Tell us another story next week. Geez and Elwan, try and redeem yourself.
Tell us about your colonoscopy, Andy.
If you've had any colonoscopies, let us know about that.
There's also been a lot of complaints, by the way, Gredo. Have you heard these complaints? When this episode goes out. I know you've been in rehearsals and stuff, right? But let me tell you, the podcast goes at 3:16 on a Friday, right? The fans are in uproar about it. They're like, bullshit about it. Jamie, so we've asked for other times that we could launch the show at. Jamie Kerr says 11.
Oh, I wonder why he said that.
Because it's based on one of my famous sketches. ICW referee Sean McLaughlin, who's been desperate for us to say his name on this show, best referee in ICW, Sean McLaughlin, says the chosen 1 PM.
I'd say Sean McLaughlin is my third favourite referee.
Our friends at the Scottish Wrestling Network say 1:23 PM, that's quite good, isn't it?
1:23. Like the count.
My suggestion is 4 in the morning. We just get producer John up.
Aye, to wake yourself up at 3:45. Fire on his computer and upload it.
Aye, get up at 1 in the morning, get up, get the edit finished and get it out.
Funny enough, he's no healing it. He's at a gig. He's patches for a fucking gig.
What gig is he away to see?
Oh, I don't know. He was at
a fucking
gig Bell
and Sebastian or something. He's away. I'm away to see Bell and Sebastian. There'll be something like that, won't it? I mean, it's not going to be... It's not going to be fucking one of the cool bands, is it? Like no. Jamiroquai?
But it may... When can we get to the point where I made an arse of this show last week?
Right. No. Last week there was a wee bit of controversial stuff, right? Because we awarded the Listener of the Week last week. And we couldn't decide between two brilliant contributors, so we had to do the flip of a coin. Now, have a listen to this. Here's what happened.
We're going to toss the coin. Blonde Brocky will be heads, and Geach will be tails.
Who's it going to be? Here's a flip.
And it is tails. So, the blonde Brocky is Listener of the Week. I'm tired, mate. Mate, I'm coming in for these rehearsals and I'm absolutely bushed.
Now, just in case anybody missed what happened there, right? The blonde Brocky was Heeds. Big apologies there to Geach, I think, who's the champion.
So what happens then? Does Geach...
I don't know what happens. I think we maybe
it's been called the Grado Screwjob.
It's the Wrestling Daft Screwjob. I've got a wee picture here printed out, and it's Grado's, he's at ringside and all that, carry on. A wee bit of Photoshop. But I don't know what we do. We're going to have to do something. Maybe we need to get these guys to Skype into the show. We need to vacate the title. We need to vacate the title. I don't think...
A tournament.
Oh, fuck. I hate a tournament.
Oh, so do you.
I hate a tournament.
I hate tourneys.
I hate it. I don't, you're lad. Oh, I see that fucking guy wrestle three times in a row.
Aye.
You know what I mean? Right, listen, so that's... We'll work it out. We're going to work on that, but that's... Let's move on. Let's move on. We've been blathering enough. Okay, now it's the time of the show where we like to bury and put over people. It's wrestling part of burying and putting over, if anybody there doesn't understand that. Basically, if you're burying something, it means that you're burying it, you're putting it out of sight, you're putting it under the ground, and if you're putting something over, and the wrestling term of putting something over, what does it mean, Grado?
It means it's good.
Right, now, here's what the listeners have had to say. Before I say about who I'm putting over and burying this week, and before Grado says it, who he's putting over and burying, Conditioner B4L has got in touch. Conditioner B4L, which sounds like some kind of prototype hair conditioner product that has been proven to poison people. Conditioner B4L, we have to take conditioner B4L off the market. It has been causing blindness in people. And he has put over, or she has put over, Kaylee Ray for winning on NXT. Massive show of Scottish talent. She should be fighting on Survivor Series with the other champs. Why is she known Survivor Series, Grado?
Don't know, but Kaylee Ray is superb. Is there also no another female wrestler there called Kyla Ray? There is in AEW, or at least there was Kyla Ray.
Well, that's not... She should... That's not right,
there needs
it?
To be a... I'm sure Kaylee would have had it first, because it feels to me that Kaylee's been wrestling since she was 13-year-old. She, maybe back in Linwood, her and Stevie Boy started out together. It feels like a century ago. I remember training in Linwood with her and Nikki Storm. And to see them get
where they are now,
it's incredible. And they totally deserve it. They're great workers, of absolute grafters. Grafters is even the word. I remember just seeing Kaylee Ray and going down to England on like a Friday night, and we were meant to go back up that same night. And she got offered two bookings to stay down and work the Saturday and Sunday. And, you know, she just done it. She just put in the hours, put in the work, put in the miles. And it's paying off for her.
The passion and the graft.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're right. Kaylee Ray.
And she's just like a normal lassie. It's weird. You know what I mean? She's so normal. She just...
There's a Kaylee Ray and there's a Kaylee Ray. And it needs to be sorted out. Kaylee Ray has to be... There has to be a battle of the Rays.
Aye.
Kaylee Ray, maybe the Manta Ray that killed Steve Irwin.
Oh, there should be a Surge. Litigation. No?
Sewage litigation? They should
sue one there.
I thought you were talking about like fucking sewage, like the sewers. No, I was like, what's happening?
Sue, as in the Colts and
right,
that.
Right, aye. Conditioner B4L also wants to bury Jim Cornette's chicken comment. No need for that in today's society, and definitely not on wrestling TV, because as we all know, the last place you want to find racism as in a wrestling show. Wrestling has a long history of not being racist. No. What do you make about this Jim Cornette? Carry on.
I have to admit, I enjoy Jim Cornette's commentary. I love listening to him, but you can't get away with that.
What do you love, though? Here's the thing. What do you love about Jim Cornette's commentary?
It's just the old school. I just like listening to an old school guy and a familiar voice.
It's a nostalgia. Sound there, it's a nostalgia. That's all it is. I just don't think, just get him to... He's no worth it. The hassle that he brings is no worth it. Like, you know what I mean? He's an old school guy with old school sensibilities.
I don't think he can be asked going to shows anyway. I listen to him in his podcast and he's just like, he has no interest. He's just pure. He hates everything.
Aye.
And I don't know why he bothers, you know what I mean?
But somebody, this is the thing, everybody was talking about that somebody should have caught that on that show, right? Somebody should have caught that.
I can't believe that slipped through.
To let that comment go out. And somebody should have caught it, you know what I mean?
It's a shame that it did, but you know what I mean? Because obviously the video got pulled down and all that, and it's no good publicity for NWA, isn't it? No.
No. Sometimes I think as well, though, these things, that sometimes I think it's just a wee bit inept, like it's somebody being inept. I think a lot of times people think this is a bad person has heard this and hasn't thought anything wrong about it and has let it go out. But I think sometimes there's just, with a lot of things like this, maybe somebody's just been a wee bit inept or took their eye off the ball. You know, maybe it's the kind of company where there isn't a big body of people that are checking the product before it goes out and stuff like that, you know what I mean? But I don't know. I don't know. It's a weird one that shouldn't have happened. Shouldn't have fucking... Get Jim Cornette to fuck, man. It's fucking... Tell you what's unfortunate. You say it's unfortunate. Jim Cornette's fucking mad chicken fucking face is unfortunate. Gary... Would like, I'll fucking never work for Cornette now because of that. I'll never get a match in one of Cornette's promotions. Gary wants to bury the WWE hotshotting and spunking the load on the NXT invasion, making a potentially huge angle feel stale and boring already. So Gary's already checked out all this drama. Have you been watching it? Have you seen any of this stuff? The, you know, this, all the brands all invading each other. Not that.
Is it building up to Survivor Series? Is that the deal?
Aye. NXT, right. NXT last night was, well, say last night, guys, it's the magic of podcasting here. Two nights ago, as this goes out, NXT was cracking, man.
So are you, let me just get this right, are you watching everything? No, what are you watching wrestling-wise? Because I'm not finding the time to catch any. What I do is I always make sure that I watch one bit of wrestling before I go to my bed every night, and I always stick something on, whether it be as even as much as a compilation of Dusty Rhodes' promos for an ECW match to, you know, anything. I always try.
What you're actually watching every night is Walk Like a Panther before you go to bed, the British wrestling
movie.
Oh, do you know,
that was horrific. I get invited down to that, man, and I thought I was going to. Stephen Graham DM'd me on Twitter and was like, mate, it's fact, actually, a couple of years ago, Stephen Graham asked me for tickets to a show down in wherever he stays. Mm-hmm. And I managed to get the promoter to give him the tickets and stuff like that. And I went, I wonder why he's coming to a show. But it obviously made sense because he done Walk Like a Panther.
Yep.
And it's funny as well. Somebody had told me when I was doing my Insane Fight Club, and this might be sounding like a big mark for myself, but I don't care. But somebody was telling me that the guy Frost, what do you call him?
Nick Frost
mm-hmm. had been watching my videos for a movie, for a wrestling movie, and I totally forgot about it. And then I realised he was on that Fighting for My Family that.
Yep.
So he was going through my videos on YouTube and stuff like that, you know what I mean? Just try to get an idea. So
having a wank.
So just
Nick Frost and Simon Pegg together on the couch having
him?
A wee wank.
Do you blame him?
Wanking each other. I like to think Nick Frost is wanking off Simon Pegg. Simon Pegg doesn't. Simon Pegg's too big now because of Mission Impossible. He wanky sell off, so he has to get so Nick Frost to do it.
Is that what Connell does to you?
Fucking Strawberry, they know how to give somebody a wank. Right, now, Gary wants to put over Jim Cornette, hopefully no longer bringing his vile shite to. All right, okay, all right, everybody hates Jim Cornette, we get it. Calzo wants to bury his wife laughing loud as fuck at Jobby.
Wants to bury his wife? That doesn't sound right.
That doesn't sound right, does he?
Don't be burying your wife, mate, unless she's dead.
Don't be burying her. What you want to do is, right, you want to chop her up, right, and then you want to get quick lime, right, and then... He wants to put over the sheer size of Billy Gunn compared to the entire AEW roster. Now, Billy Gunn, did you see Billy Gunn on AEW?
No. Nah.
He was out in the ring.
Was he? Did he get a match? Did he have a match?
He was out doing a wee bit of work out there.
No way, man, how do I see that?
No, well, watch it then. And he was, but he looked massive.
Oh, he's a big boy. Oh, he's a big boy. Did I ever tell you about the time that he was on the same show as me in a Rumble? And I says, look, mate, is there any chance I can get a line of your trunks? What music you come up to the night? He said, he checked, and he was coming up to the DX music, the suck it. And I went, right, mate, any chance? Well, I'm after you in the Rumble. Can I come out to Ass Man using your trunks? And he's like, I never. So he comes out, does his DX. It's him and Hardcore Holly in the ring. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 4, 4. I'm a nice man. I come out with his fucking trunks on. my belly out, walking out to Dane Billy Gunn. Gets in the ring. Bob Holly and Billy Gunn. And I just go to the ring and the ropes and went, used to suck it. And I swear to God, you ever seen that video? No.
It's amazing.
Oh, you need to see it.
Yeah, that takes some balls, by the way.
That's why you... Because I'm no fear for these guys. A lot of folk are intimidated or I'm just getting shown. Holy look at the size. I'm just getting past footage of Billy Gunn. Oh, that's a wrestler, mate.
I want to put this out to the listeners out there.
That's
right?
A wrestler for you.
See these listeners out there? I want them to picture this, right? And they're wrestlers themselves and they're on a show and Billy Gunn's on the show. In a million years, would you ever say to the guy, can I come out to your music and wear your shorts?
Aye,
it's fucking unbelievable.
Aye, and I've got this great picture of me standing there wearing these trunks with a fag in my gob and a pint and a can of lager in my hand.
That's why you're the best, mate. That's why you're the best. You had Vader's mask on as well, didn't
you? I fucking stank.
Well, Vader's mask stank.
I'd
be disappointed if it didn't.
Oh, that was brilliant. I've told you your story about what he said the next day, didn't I?
I don't think you've told the listeners, though.
Right. Tagged with Vader. Mm-hmm. Right. I says, mate, can I wear your mask? Yeah, no problem, kid. Right, so I'm wearing the mask and he's standing in the apron going, this is good shit, this is good shit, this is good shit. And he comes in and he gives about 3 choke slams, does his Vader bomb, whatever. Bro, he comes back, that was a lot of fun, you guys know what you're doing. And then the next day he's got a match with Wolfgang and he's in the same room as me. I can hear him talking about the match. Yeah, yeah, bro, yeah, anything. That match I had last night was the shits. I'm like, mate, I'm fucking standing right here, Vader. Fuck's sake. I'm like that to my pals. Fucking, he was all excited last night. Now you're saying the match was shite. I was devastated.
I love that story.
Rest in peace.
Hi, true. Rest in, what, I mean, what a guy he was. What a wrestler. That's a wrestler, by the way.
I always remember as well, I know. He done a gig in TNA, right? He came. And he fought Bram. Anyway, here, kid, come here. Can I do my warm-up with you? He's like, I'm like, aye, nae bother. Lock up with me. So I'm locking up. Lock up again. Okay, lock up, right? Well, I must have locked up about 20 times. I turn around and Tommy Dreamer's just standing there, pissing himself, and he's like, what am I fucking watching here? What am I watching? Vader and Grado's just constantly tying up. Again. I'm going, right, now, pure out of breath and all that. Tommy Dreamer's like, what the fuck am I watching here?
Beautiful. who else have we got here? Andy Clark wants to put over CM Punk returning and being allowed to do and say whatever he wants, baby.
I heard he was good on that show.
I watched a wee bit of what he was doing. Listen, the guy's a good talker. The guy is a good communicator.
Yep.
You know, he's good at communicating, good talker. Hey, I heard a brilliant story about CM Punk, by the way, right?
Mm-hmm.
One time, right, he had this mask on. Tune in to last week's episode, if you don't know that story, episode 4 of Wrestling Daft. There's a great CM Punk story involved.
Yeah, there is. Just guys, try and catch it.
You've got to
check her out. Yeah, check her out.
Barry,
yeah.
Macaroni products that are only macaroni in its simplest form.
Nice.
Sacrilege.
Nice.
I also would like to bury cakes that contain fruit.
Don't agree.
Why does carrot cake need raisins?
Oh, it's a must.
Fucking disgusting.
Don't agree.
I'd have to say I love that part.
Macaroni products that aren't macaroni.
Bar, please.
So basically he doesn't like the spin-off, so he doesn't like sausage and macaroni, he doesn't like chili macaroni. You know, he doesn't like macaroni. Right.
I'm not sure what he's worried about there.
But he's maybe worried for me because macaroni is my life.
He's
Folk know that. Aye, folk know that macaroni is my fucking
life. You love macaroni, didn't you?
Aye, macaroni is my life, mate. It's just a thing. Like, I can't go into a restaurant. I actually get pissed off when I see macaroni in a restaurant because I know I'm going to need to order it and no get something
so
else.
It ruins it for me.
I've got to try everybody's macaroni.
Jimmy Norris wants to bury every cunt that tweeted to CM Punk saying, fight me. Did you see this?
No.
CM Punk, he's back and all these wrestlers are all like that. Yeah, well, maybe you should step into the ring with me,
oh,
baby.
Oh, is this wrestlers that are doing it?
Seth Rollins, not that.
That'd be the same.
Seth Rollins, that.
Maybe you should step in the ring with me then, buddy, and see how you're like,
fucking shut up, man. It's
the same folk that probably hug each other after their match. I hate that shit.
Too right,
and
man.
Then go on the internet and put each other over. Oh, it was so good tonight.
Oh,
he should get booked more.
Don't hug me, Seth Rollins. Stu Bro wants to put over the KO, Kevin Owens, and Drew match until the beak came out. Triple H, the beak, he called him.
The beak.
until the beak came out.
I love that.
And he wants to bury Rowan walking about with a wee fish box.
All right.
All right, I knew Dara. So, listen, thanks very much for all your input. I love reading out there, putting over and burying
so
people, because it's all. I love people being moany bastards. And I also love because it gives people an opportunity to moan about things like macaroni. I mean, it's...
Get it off your chest.
Now, remember, you can get involved in this show, and we want you to. Get us on Twitter, at Wrestling Daft, on Instagram, at Wrestling Daft Podcast, and just Wrestling Daft on Facebook. And next week, we're starting a new part of the show, by the way, where we want you to become a Wrestling Daft mark. All you have to do, right, is watch your wrestling that week. Watch your wrestling as you normally do. Come on the show. Come on the show. Skype in. Come on. Tell us what's been happening, because Grado is in Panto. He's a hard-working man. He's got other things on. No, just Panto. He's got other things on as well. He's got no time to watch it, right? Well, just kid on, he would be watching it anyway. And I'm going to be too busy watching obscure Japanese wrestling matches and all that, right? So get in touch. Let us know if you want to be our personal Wrestling Daft mark for next week, who's going to fill us in on the wrestling scene.
Oh, so I don't need to watch it and somebody's going to come on and tell
me
what happened.
Somebody's going to come on and just tell you what happened.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
You just made the list! And can you believe, Grado, this week it's 23 years since The Rock made his debut.
Oh my me, doesn't Hoff make me feel old, that, Chris?
And 21 years since he won his first WWF World Championship.
Feels like yesterday.
So we thought in this week's List of Wrestling Daft we would take a look at Big Dwayne's finest moments. So this is the List of Wrestling Daft, and here is my list, my top three Rock moments. As The Rock flinging Stone Cold Steve Austin off that bridge.
This fight is on! Right here outside! The Rock and the Rattlesnake! No!
Yourself, you piece of go to hell!
No! Oh, no!
Did he no launch his mad belt or no?
Flung his belt. Woof!
That's what I was more worried about. I was more worried about the belt. How are they going to get that?
Well, they would just make.
Do you think it was in real water?
I think so. I think they would just make another one. I mean, I loved that, man. See, that was, that's, see when people talk about the Attitude Era and all that?
Aye.
That's what I think about. I think about that outside segment where they would go, what, The Rock's on a bridge.
Aye.
They're all, you know what I mean?
Aye. I think about Austin putting the cement in Vince's Corvette.
Oh, man.
That was, but I always, it always amazes me how they managed to film that and no get concrete in the flare in that arena. You know what I mean?
Aye, aye.
Some cunt coming in for a walk the next day to do the cleaning going, what's this?
Do you think it was maybe just custard? Grey custard?
Well, that's a shout. No, it's no, because I went to Access many moons ago and that was there, the core with the concrete on it. That was one of the exhibitions, aye.
That's cool.
Isn't it?
That's
cool, that, isn't it?
That's cool.
You think the money they could burn, man? Brand new motors just getting fucking...
They were wrecking motors every
written
week.
Half, I know.
You know, at that time, wrecking motors every week.
Jumbo.
Hangs on motors.
Big jumbo limos and all that.
Hummers getting blown up and all that. Guys getting flung off bridges.
Aye. Remember Triple H when he was in his, he wrestled Stone Cold? And he get this crang lifted. Austin getting a mad crang and hooked under the motor.
Aye.
And lifted him. And I really thought, because I was only about 11, 12 at the time, and I thought, Triple H is deed.
They're going to kill the beak.
Aye. The beak's deed. The beak's deed.
But The Rock was just, that was a brilliant period for The Rock.
The Rock is the best of all time. That music hit.
Wait a minute, for you, is he is for you?
Oh,
the best
absolutely,
of all time?
Absolutely. Me and my two pals had booked up to go to WrestleMania in 2011, and it wasn't looking too shabby, man. I thought nothing's happening, and then they said the special guest is going to be announced tonight, and I'll never forget it. I stayed up to watch Raw live, one of the only times in the last 15 years that I have. And all the lights go down. And The Rock's not been in wrestling for about 10 years.
Nah.
And if your smell hits. And I remember just bouncing up and down my bed because I knew The Rock was going to beat WrestleMania and I was going to it, man. I was fucking near tears, man, jumping about. Mum was going, what's going on in there? Mum, The Rock's going to beat WrestleMania! The Rock's going to beat WrestleMania! The Rock's going to beat WrestleMania!
He's a star, isn't he?
Oh, I love him.
He's
a
star. But I love that. And also, I'm a big, massive Stone Cold Steve Austin fan, man. And they two guys working together. I loved it.
I prefer The Rock. Do you think there's a lot? How many people prefer The Rock to Austin? Who would you say the percentage is?
I don't really know. All I would say is, see, at that period of time, you had like...
You didn't know what you had.
Exactly. You had The Rock, you had Stone Cold, you had Foley, you had Triple H, you didn't know where to look.
I know.
There was stars everywhere. There you was. Didn't know where to look.
The thing is, see, back then... You knew everybody. You knew everybody's gimmick. You know, there's Godfather. He's the prostitute. No,
aye.
He's not a prostitute. What was he? A pimp. Right. You know what I mean? You had Bill Buchanan. He's a police. Bill Buchanan. No. I meant to see.
You knew everybody.
Bossman. Bossman. He was a policeman.
In Val right? Venus, he was a plumber.
So he was. Pizza no, delivery driver.
You had. It was amazing, right? It was fucking amazing. But you didn't know what you had.
I
like you say, you didn't know what you had. Right, let's move on to my number two. As a match. Now, I know a lot of people talking about their favourite Rock moments are going to quite often be pulling out bits of promo and stuff like that. But listen, The Rock at his best in a match with people at their best is like nothing else in the fucking world. And my number two is The Rock versus The Undertaker.
Ooh.
Versus Kurt Angle.
Oh.
2000.
How much more can he do? The champion is down. Angle is up. Look at Kurt Angle.
That match is...
I don't remember that match, really.
That match is unbelievable, is by the way. And it's a match that's kind of flown under radars now. You know what I mean? I'll tell you why. Because people don't really like triple threat matches, I don't think.
I hate them.
I think people don't like triple threat matches. They normally don't work. They're normally a mess. If you don't remember this match, you need to fucking remind yourself of this one.
Okay, I'll watch it tonight.
They're doing each other's finishers and all that. It's fucking madness. It's madness. It's brilliant. It's
Magnus?
Brilliant. No, madness. Magnus comes in.
Magnus comes in. Gladiator gear on.
But that's an amazing match, so I tell people to go in. Because The Rock, listen, and Angle as well in the mix. Oh. The Rock and Angle always worked well together as well, you know what I mean? Please watch this. Please watch this match. That's my number two moment. And my number one moment.
It better be this. See it.
Is The Rock versus Hogan.
Ah, absolutely. My favourite match of all time. Can he beat it?
That is genuinely, I think, sometimes I think to myself, if an alien came down from outer space and landed on Earth and they say to me, what is wrestling?
Mm-hmm.
I think I would need to show them The Rock versus Hogan.
Talk about people showing that match. I basically took my ex-girlfriend and Shah Samuels hostage one night and they were tired and wanted to go to bed. Sit down. We're watching Rock and Hogan at Mania. Fucking don't move. And then any time they looked away, I went, you missed it, getting wee bits, I'd rewind it. Shat always brings it up. Remember the time you took me and your ex fucking hostage to watch Rock and Hogan? Because I loved it. I loved the story behind it as well, that Rock wanted Hogan flown down to somewhere in Florida, him and Pat Patterson, to go through the match.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that they come up for must have just to get fucking scrapped because they didn't expect the reaction that Hogan would go. But the only thing is, mate, do you know what I made it? You know what would have made it better?
What?
Hogan coming out to Real American with the red and yellow. That's the only thing that would have been perfect.
Maybe, but I think it was perfect how it played out because it just felt completely like this is.
I suppose,
like a hot. It's like all these tens of thousands of people, all fucking involved in like improvising a fucking thing. Like it was just everybody was like the fans were in control. Then they were in control, and then it's just an amazing thing to watch. And sometimes they're doing so much while doing so fucking little as well. Just looks. That thing that The Rock is great at, we're talking about The Rock here, but The Rock is great at just fucking changing the atmosphere with a look.
Aye.
With a fucking look out to the crowd. With a look, he's up with a raise of the eyebrow, and fucking Hogan's the same. Hogan could just snap his head, look to the left, look to the right, and fucking, the crowd were going bananas in that match.
It's crazy to think. I got my golden retriever dug in the very next day after that match, Molly, who's been dead 6 years. That's crazy to think about that.
A long time ago. I would love to talk. Is that the dream?
I think our anniversary of death is coming up.
Coming out? Like it's an album. Let me get that one.
Rest in peace, Molly.
I would love, the dream is, obviously, for Wrestling Daft, is one day we get The Rock on this show.
Right.
I think it could happen one day because The Rock is also a good guy.
I've got connections to River City and they'll probably get his number, man.
The Rock is a good guy. One day, and I'd love to just ask him about that because I want to know about that fucking moment. How they rode that roller.
Tweet him, every other cunt does.
I know, but I want to be professional about it. I don't want to be all these desperate bastards. I'll tweet him. So, what do you think? What's your favourite Rock moment?
You
agree with me there?
I would say that. Also, the bit when he came back at 2011. Also, what else would I say? Winning the title at Backlash 2000, that was great.
Aye.
He beat Triple H. I loved that because that's when I was just wrestling daft.
I didn't want to say Survivor Series Deadly Game again, where Corporate Rock is, you know, the twist at the end. The Rock wins and he's fucking in. Right? McMahon, by the way, The Rock plays that whole pay-per-view. I always bang on about that pay-per-view. I think it's my favourite pay-per-view ever, Deadly Game.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so. And but so I don't want to. I didn't want to put that in again because I'll just be repeating myself.
Remember, the Rock got his tits done. And he had to wrestle on a tap.
Right. Well, we want to get him on the show, Grado. So could you know?
Sorry.
Going about that. Right there. But obviously the listeners have been getting in touch as well because they've got fuck all else today. Ian Porter got in touch and says they're not giving a fuck. Unprotected 10 plus chair shots to Mick Foley's coop.
Aye, I didn't think
at Royal Rumble. That's what he loved.
Aye.
The cerebral damage.
Remember, I was Foley went on about that in the movie, didn't he?
Aye.
About how he was only meant to take like one or two and he just kept going. Fucking hell, man.
How did you find Mick Foley?
Oh, Michael's brand new, mate.
Michael Foley? Do you like him?
Oh, Foley's a man. Aye, he really is a cool guy.
Aye.
He wears a bigger bum bag than me. And I shat myself because, you know, you always hear stories about how like cheap he is in terms of like he's always like every penny counts.
He watches his money.
But like I've even heard stories like, you know, you stay out at people's houses and like when they go out for dinner, like he wants everything bought for him.
You're
and
worried
all that,
he was
right?
going to come back to your house?
No, I was worried because he gave me his shirt after Fear and Loathing, Kenny's cactus thing.
Then
I went home and I opened up the pocket and there was fucking 20 bangers in it, at US 20 US bangers. And I was like, oh, fuck, I hope he doesn't want me to send that out to him, man, because Kenny was a tight fisted bugger. Aye. I was like, fuck him.
But did he let it go?
I think he did let it go because I did tweet, mate, have fun 20 bar in your pocket. Do you want me to send it out kind of thing? But I think he just liked it and fucked off.
Beautiful. Mark Woods says the Rock concert 2003, fucking unreal. By the way, the best thing about being in Sacramento is that in an hour and a half the Rock gets to leave Sacramento.
The only thing I remember with wrestling always being in Sacramento, they could never fit a ramp in the arena. Anytime they wrestled in Sacramento, there was no ramp. It was just a pure,
that's an incredible bit of detailed knowledge. An incredible bit of detailed knowledge.
There was always no ramp in Sacramento, man.
Nathan Lyon, Rock Hogan at Mania. Of course, Nathan, you're right. You agree with Ab and Grado. You are our friend. The Sean Mayer before Christmas is selling the Stone Cold Stunner like he'd just been hit by a freight train. Fuck, of course!
Love the way he sold that.
Oh,
there's a compilation of that. I love watching it.
And fucking Stone Cold loves the way he sells it as well, man. Stone Cold loves it, man, the way he sells it. He would spring about, bounce off the ropes with his ankles. Somehow he would get a stunner on his ankles, would bounce off the top rope.
Aye. And then there's some folk that would take it, you know, there was some people took it completely different for everybody else. Regal's was always weird and so was Scott Hall's. They'd always take it and take a big, massive back bump rather than going down on their knees. They would take it and bend and fall backwards. It was always intriguing to me to see how people took that stunner.
Shane McMahon takes a good stunner.
Did he? Aye.
He's
a great seller,
as
it is.
He's a brilliant seller. Robbie McGraw says it has to be the This Is Your Life segment on Raw with Mankind. Hands down, the funniest segment of that era and also the most viewed in the history of Raw. Some statistics. It's too long.
Is it 25 minutes or something?
I think it's a touch too long. Sorry, guys, I think it's a touch too long.
Get out of it.
Still good, though. Captain Wow says when him and Stone Cold sang together, absolute comedy gold for the two goats. No, greatest of all times. That means, I've said this before, Stone Cold is brilliant at doing comedy stuff.
He is.
If he doesn't get the credit he deserves, he's brilliant at doing comedy stuff. Brilliant at it.
I remember going to see Rebellion 2001 with my mom, one of the best days of my life. And the Rock and Stone Cold had a match, and at the end they done their post match concert, and it was superb. I remember that year 2001, and I remember because we had tried for years to get tickets Insurrection Rebellion, never got it, and we eventually got tickets. And then I remember seeing September the 11th happen, and it was like a month before Rebellion. I was like, "What? No. Rebellion's going to be cancelled." Ken. At that time, only been 12, 13. I wasn't able.
That would have been the worst the worst repercussion, wouldn't it? Of,
you know, I wouldn't think that way now, do you know what I mean?
That was my first thought as well when I saw it.
I just cleared up, I was a Wayne when that happened, so didn't I? That would obviously. That's not my thoughts now.
And Sad Panda finally just wants to say that his favourite Rock moment is the Tooth Fairy with Stephen Merchant.
Never saw it.
Look, The Rock is a massive star. He is...
He's gone places, isn't he?
He's running the show. So don't you fucking cast up some shitey films to try and...
Get me ready.
Everybody has a shitey project in their past that they regret. Me, it's Burniston. Grado, it's... I don't know. Maybe this pantomime is about today. We'll see. Listen, let's choose a listener of the week for this vacant title. We need to get this title as far away as possible for these two guys.
Should we flip a coin again?
It's toxic.
Let's flip a coin again.
Listen, what I want to put in the... Can I put in the hat... I like Mark Woods's.
Right, mine's is going to be. Oh, is yours the guy man about the beak?
Oh, no, no, no.
He's
no.
mine.
Stu Bro.
Stu Bro is mine for calling Triple H the beak.
Right. Mark Woods is mine.
Right, so Stu Bro is going to be Tails.
Aye.
And Heeds is going to be.
Mark Woods.
Mark Woods. Right, we're ready.
Here we go. And he's reaching down to pick up the coin, and it is.
Tails! So, Stu Bro wins.
That's right. It goes to Stu Bro, and I watched it, and it was all legit this time. It was absolutely legit. Well the done. New Wrestling Daft champion is Stu Bro. And it's clean as you like. Clean as you like.
I see it's not bothered, actually, isn't it? It's easy. Please welcome to the show a friend of mine, one of the best ever British wrestlers to grace a wrestling ring. He has been in Japan, he's been in America, he's been across the whole world. One of the best wrestlers of all time. Please welcome to the show, the anarchist, Doug Williams. Doug, how are you doing, my man?
Yeah, doing very well. Very well.
You're doing good. You've retired. Have you actually, definitely officially retired now?
Yeah, I have, yeah. My last match, a year ago, 16th of December was my last match, last year.
Are you missing it?
I start to, and then I watch something or I see some of it, and then I think, no, I don't miss it now.
Who would you see? Give me an example of something or somebody you would see that makes you think you don't miss it.
Well, I mean, it's a mixture of many things. I help out backstage a show in Germany on a monthly basis. So I sort of watch an agent the matches there, and that kind of puts me off. And then I watch a lot of TV stuff of various kinds, and it's just different now to how I was trained.
So you were kind of trained in a kind of funny era, weren't you? When did you officially start training? Was it like 95 or something like that?
No, earlier than that, 93 I started.
93. So that was kind of you were at Hammerlock. Was it Andre Baker that initially trained you?
Yep, that's it. I was in the first ever class that he had.
Really?
I think he opened the school in April 93 and I started in June of 93.
Is there anybody from that class that's still in the business?
Phil Powers.
All right, aye. He makes the rings, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah, aye. He makes the rings.
What were the days like training back then, Doug? Do you have fond memories of their times?
Yeah, I do. To be honest, if you go back very early when I first started, it was a lot of fun. I mean, the gym in inverted commas was just a kind of industrial garage on a cliff top, overlooking the sea in Folkestone. And the ring was terrible. The ring was like supported on tyres, and it had no spring whatsoever, and the ropes were loose and everything. But it was just good fun getting in there. You know what it's like when you're young and you're a fan, you just want to get in there and wrestle, you know, you just want to get in the ring, don't you, and muck about. And that's, I mean, Andre didn't do much training per se. He was more of a let you get on with it type of person, you know?
Yeah.
Aye. It's funny, you know, Doug, when I think about British wrestling, the people that I think of, when you think about the kind of modern era, well, it's modern now, but when I think about British wrestling, I think of yourself, Johnny, Jody, and Alex Shane, the 40s. Mm-hmm. And I think it's funny that so they were brought up in Hammerlock as well, is that right? They were brought through Andre as well.
They were, and the reason for that really is, you know, in England especially, there wasn't any training schools. Back then it was still very much a closed shop. And it was very difficult to get into the business because, for one thing, the business was dying, so a lot of promoters are packed up, so where do you go? And the promoters that were left and the boys that were left didn't want to give anyone any access because they're going to lose their spots, the limited spots that were left. What Andre provided was an opportunity for people to come and train and get in the ring and learn outside of kind of the business as it was at that time. And, you know, once you started training and you start making little inroads into little various promoters, you can get in. But it's very, very different to how it is now. I mean, he was literally the only school, the only place you could go.
What age were you at that time, Doug, when you started with Andre?
93, I was 21.
Because I met Andre a few times when I was, and I must have been running about the same age. I was a young guy when I met Andre, and he was a formidable guy. I found him quite a scary guy at first, and then he was an absolute sweetheart with me. But I mean, it's a scary thing going into a situation like that, into a training situation.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I think, remember I'd done on and off, I'd done 10 years of judo.
Yeah.
before that, and sort of, you know, the first time we went into the school, you know, he tested me, put me in with a few of the other guys who I threw about, you know.
Yeah.
and that kind of, you know what I mean, gave me a level of respect such I wasn't, you know, I was actually given some kind of respect is the word, really, by Andre, you know what I mean? I was taught, he knew I wasn't an idiot. He knew I was serious about it. He knew I wanted to, you know, become, you know, a proper professional wrestler. I'm not interested in there to find out all the secrets or just muck about in the ring. And I think that helped me a lot, you know.
And I dare say coming for that judo background as well.
Yeah.
I mean, up here, a lot of the Scottish guys up here, you know, guys like Grado, and going back to guys like Kid Fight and going and Lionheart and stuff like that, they all, when they were training, there was a big element of them kind of training each other. It wasn't just, you know, it wasn't just a trainer and student thing. They were helping to train each other. So you must have been passing on a lot of judo knowledge to people.
Yeah, definitely, you know, because a lot of it helps. Obviously, the bumping is all similar, the timing, throws and that sort of thing, you know, but there's a lot of it that doesn't help. You know, you have to kind of wean yourself off those bad habits. But the good thing about Andre is, yeah, we did all train together, but he'd bring in guys occasionally to help us out, you know, people he knew already in the business, which was good as well, you know.
Doug, there's too many wrestling schools out there, and I don't think they can even, it's a cheek that some of them even call them schools. You've got guys that have never been out their, you know, the local area wrestling and community centres that are training other guys, taking money, and I think it's a big problem. I also think there's too many shows, but I think the main problem is these guys that are training other people that don't have the experience. And I'm like, you're taking money off of people to train. And it's frustrating for me, but it must be frustrating for somebody, like, especially you, that was... Like, you were brought up in an environment where you were challenged on respect, and, you know, you say that it was hard for you to get in. People just walk in through a donor and give a guy £15 and they start to get trained. You know, fucking...
Yeah, you see, pisses me off. I have a similar view to you, Grado, except this is how I think of it. It's fine opening up a little wrestling gym and everybody gets in there and they can all wrestle around and do everything. It's when you sell yourself as being a real professional outfit and pushing your guys to be on shows and charging the public to come and watch those guys, then it crosses over the line.
Oh.
I don't have a problem with people, you know, they want to open a little wrestling group amongst themselves and all do it on a Saturday afternoon in the gym and train. That's fine. It's when you get a guy who has never done anything, puts himself out there as having done something, sells it to those poor people, and then tries to push his guys onto the shows and charges the public for it. Then it crosses a line, as far as I'm concerned.
But do you two think that the standard in general of promotions in Britain is better now? I mean, because I remember back when NWA UK Hammerlock, when that was running, there was a lot of wee tin pot promotions in other parts of the country that were, really bad. I mean,
I've been out for a year, so I can't really say what it is like at the current time. But say go back a year, you know, it varies the same as it ever has. But, I mean, the style has changed. So I see a lot of style, even in the bigger promotions, that I don't necessarily agree is correct.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't say the guys are bad wrestlers, per se. I'll tell you what there's a lot less of. I did see a lot less of shows, absolutely terrible shit-ass shows. Everyone generally had a decent... Maybe that's just the shows I was booked on. Okay. You know, maybe I got lucky in the last couple of years of my career. But I did seem to see a lot less of those. Grado might tell you a different story. You know, he takes anything and everything. So.
Fucking right, Eddie. But, Doug, see, your style, when you wrestle, man, it looks absolutely flawless. Flawless. Who did you watch growing up? Who did you base your style off anybody? Or did you kind of try and create your own wee style?
When I started wrestling, I was obviously a fan of WWF, and there's people you kind of look up to. But I appreciated that the best style I could learn was like that British style, and the people and the peers around me at that time when I was on the circuit. So I was picking up things from Robbie Brookside, from Chick Cullen, from Johnny Kidd, even Blondie Barrett. You know what I mean? Those old, and it's just integrating those elements, what they learn as their traditional style, into the stuff that you appreciate as in the American wrestling as well, and putting it all together. But it, you know, the flawless style or whatever, you know, the way I wrestle is just, it's just practice over and over, just doing the really boring stuff. Uh-huh. I wish I could, you try and tell people at training schools, you just got to practice stuff over and over again so it's second nature, but no one wants to do it, do they? Uh-huh. So, you know, never.
Because they keep practicing and practicing and have that flawless style, and then they can have the greatest match of all time, which I'm sure I witnessed. You can tell me what it is. Yeah. Doug Williams versus BJ Whitmer.
Now, in your mind, you watched that. I pulled him aside,
right, in Bethnal Green. I says, Doug, I just want to say one of probably my favourite match of all time was you and BJ Whitmer. And you paused 5 seconds, then you told me.
So I've never wrestled BJ.
I was sure I saw you wrestle BJ Whitmer, but I think I got it mixed up with you and Christopher Daniels in Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor show number 16, Expect the Unexpected. What a fucking beautiful match.
Oh, is that when I won the FWA title back?
Is that what it was? It probably could have been. Aye. What a time that must have been, man, going to America, because there had only been a handful of guys that were going to America at that time, and then you end up getting a spot on Ring of Honor, you day King of the Indies. That must have been a really exciting time for you.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, you get that nerves about going out there and what it's going to be like. But the interesting for me at the thing for me at the time was you get out there and the shows are just the same as anywhere else at the end of the day. You know what I mean? It's just that they have that exposure and that publicity that you just couldn't hope to get anywhere else in the world at that time. And obviously Ring of Honor and their you know, their philosophy and the creation of this new promotion was an exciting thing. But at the end of the day, when you got in there, you were wrestling in a community hall in front of 300 people. You changed in the basement. It was sweaty. It was hot. It was the same as wrestling anywhere else. And that made me laugh. You know, I just thought to myself, yeah, travel 1,000 miles and I'm just doing the same thing. Yeah.
But you talk about all that traveling, right? There was a long, long period of your career where you were the British wrestler. I mean, that was without a doubt. I mean, the proper ambassador for British wrestling was just a long, long period of your career where it was like, here's the British guy on this big Japanese show, here's the British guy in this American show, and it's you. Did you feel the pressure on it? Did that feel like a lot of pressure?
Fucking me again, eh?
No, but did you feel pressure for that? Because you were representing a scene to an extent.
Yeah, no, I didn't feel it from that respect. I felt it. The pressure just came from wanting to make a good impression within that company at the time, such they would book me again or give me regular bookings. You're funny. I never ever felt of it as being I'm representing the whole of British wrestling. I've got a good account of myself. Although, having said that, I did want to represent the British style and publicise that and show people that was still something special and that was still something, you know, that was special to us, specific to us in this country. And we do have a style and it still does exist and it can be put into good matches and work with Americans, work with Japanese, whatever it might be. Yeah. But no, I never felt pressure to represent the country, which funny thing to say, but I didn't really feel that at all, you know. Although it was an honour for me. You know,
you're
the only British guy, of course.
No, definitely. And you were, you know, part of that scene where guys like Low Key, CM Punk, Brian Danielson and stuff were coming through. Was there any particular guy that you loved working for that kind of era? Was there anybody that you really liked?
Yeah, obviously I love working Chris Daniels. I must have worked him 200 times in my career. You mentioned the names, you know, Brian Danielson, so easy to work. It's guys that bothered to study kind of the English style, and you get in the ring with them and you don't have to talk too much with them and you can just work through it and it's magic, you know what I mean? Samoa Joe as well, even, you know, when he was green, when he first started out, just so easy to work with, those guys.
So did you find that a lot of the American guys you worked with and stuff would be students of the British style? They would know that stuff?
That level, definitely. The Ring of Honor support people and those sort of things definitely were. They studied what they could get hold of at that time, which wasn't much. Mm-hmm. You know, like YouTube was kind of in its infancy. There was a few British tapes flying about, but not a lot. But, you know, they managed to track it down. They studied it. And, you know,
We like to talk about, me and Gredo like to talk about the tape trading scene on this show, because we come to a time when there was a lot of tape trading happening. And I remember a tape trader guy that I spoke to in England said that a lot of the British wrestling tapes were actually going to America, to American wrestlers. It was actually American wrestlers that wanted to see a lot of them.
Chris Hero, he was daft on it, I'm sure. He was always getting tapes of Johnny Saint and World of Sport and stuff like that. He was forever getting them shipped to her. Mm-hmm. Was that something you were into, Doug? Did you manage to get involved in trading tapes, or was there any specific tape that was passed about the school when you were young? You know, watch this, have a look at this. Was there anything?
No, I mean, I wasn't that young, really, when I started getting tapes, and that was probably after I started it's a funny thing, really, because before I started training, I only really watched, I bought all the magazines that were around, you know, the American magazines. Mm-hmm. I only watched American stuff and English stuff. When I started training and getting into it, it's when I started getting into watching Japanese stuff. And most of the tapes I bought or tried to get hold of were like old Japan and New Japan stuff from like 94 onwards, 94, 95, you know, the Super J Cup. Like Champions Carnival and all that sort of stuff.
Tell me about going to Japan, man. Tell me what happens. Is it the same idea in terms of, you know, when we go to Germany and a guy picks you up in his motor, or some kind of guy that helps out with the company? Is it the kind of same idea, or was it a bit more professional because it was Noah you were working for?
Yeah, it's a little bit. I mean, obviously you land at the airport and the guy picks you up in his car and drives you to the hotel. But, you know, they have a tour bus they lay on for you. They had a guy... When I was there, they had a Gaijin tour bus. It had a couple of Japanese on it, but it was mainly the... Because when I started with Noah in 2003, they actually had 10 foreigners on their tour. So there was a lot of us. And, it was a tour bus. They have a young boy on... What they call a young boy. It's like an apprentice wrestler, Japanese wrestler on the bus who takes all your bags out and he helps you and everything like that. If you want to go shopping and get some stuff, he'll help you around and everything. Very professional, you know what I mean? Take you to your hotel before the show, transport you back there afterwards, which you need because you're heavily reliant on them because nobody speaks the language, signs are in English.
Aye.
You know, be struggled. It's not like, you know, it's not like flying to Germany, Grado, where you know you're waiting in the airport and no one's there to pick you up.
Oh,
you're making a phone call to a promoter saying where are you, and then someone turns up in their Fiat Cinquecento and you squeeze in three other guys in your luggage. You know,
tell me about it. As I say. It was, we had a good time in Germany a couple of months ago, didn't we, Doug?
Steve Linsky.
That was a very... I think Linsky had a bottle of chocolate vodka or something like that. What was it? Was it
chocolate?
Was it vodka? Aye, wait, you screwing your face up. You were drinking it.
Doesn't matter about the taste by then.
No, but Japan must have been brilliant, and what a great memory I have as well, as I've spoke about it on the podcast. But the time that you and who was it? Was it Stevie Knight? You worked Ogawa and Mitsuharu Misawa, and Carl Luke, man, it blew my mind.
I know. Wow. It's crazy, really, when you think about it.
When you think about it, it was crazy. There was
about 100 fans.
I remember, like, there was more Japanese press there and people falling about Misawa than there was actual RC's own seats.
Do you know what? I'll tell you a funny thing about that, because Ogawa told me afterwards that Misawa enjoyed that much more than they did at the Sky Dome. It's like anything, isn't it? When you have those little matches, there's no pressure. You can just go out there, enjoy yourself. You're not trying to kill each other, just having fun. And I think that's... And I think also it's very special for them because they, so isolated, they didn't really appreciate they're such big stars outside of the country. Somewhere like Scotland in the middle of nowhere and there's still 100 fans. They're so ecstatic about that, you know what I mean?
So talk to us about the career you had with TNA. You were there for quite a number of years. You won, I think, the X Division numerous times. You won a tag title with Nick Aldis.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Okay, well, I signed my first contract with them in 2008, and it was primarily just to be used on their first UK tour. And then they wanted to bring me over, but I still had some Japan commitments, so I had to finish up my Japan tours, which finished in early 2009. And then in May 2009, they signed Nick. And they re-signed my contract because I only had a year. And then they started the British Invasion in May 2009. And it kind of went from there, really. The first year, 2009, most of that was in that tag team, winning the TNA tag titles.
Aye.
You know, that was fun times. I still lived in England at that time and I used to fly back and forth.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's what I done. Did they make you move to America then? Because that's the deal I had.
I had a year contract 08 to 09, and I had another year to 2010. When I went to re-sign 2010, they said I had to move to America.
Was that Hogan that told you to move?
No, this is before Hogan. This is still Terry Taylor and Jeff Jarrett.
Aye, aye.
But they signed me for 2 years instead of one if I did that. So with an extension, with an option of an extension for 3. So, you know, that was fine by me. That was okay. But so I moved in, I want to say, September 2010. And I was X Division champion at the time on my second run. And it kind of all just went downhill after that. Really? But yeah, I moved to America. I was exhibition champion for another 2 months. Then I won the TV title for like a month or so. And then they gave it to Abyss. And then it is 2011. They just stopped using me, really.
But when did you work Flair at Wembley?
Oh, that was 2012.
Right. Yeah. That must have been something. Was it the main event that night?
No, it wasn't the main event. It was, I don't know, third or fourth. I'll tell you a little story about that, though. I had horrible, horrible toothache that tour. And I was heavily reliant on one of the boys giving me painkillers to get through the matches because it was so bad. It was like one of my wisdom teeth at the back here.
Mm. Oh, Christ.
It was kind of in a daze when I wrestled Flair because I was all kind of hyped up on these painkillers. Not hyped up, but they make you a little bit drowsy, don't they? A little bit spaced out. So I don't think at the time I really appreciated or felt that excited about it because I was just like, oh, the pain, of, you know, the numbness in my head. But looking back on it, it was pretty special, I think. It's something that no one else has ever done.
And what was it like to work him? Did he speak much before it? Was he a matter of, let's just call it, what, really?
All we talked about was the finish.
Really?
Oh, man.
And even that changed because he injured himself and we had to go home early. But no, it's all in the ring. He called everything. But I say he called everything. It's like a general thing. Like he'd say, come back. So I'd start firing back and had to do all my own stuff. And then he'd cut me off when he wanted. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's all natural. It's all totally, you know, ad lib, for want of a better phrase. Yeah. You know, it was different. It's totally different, you know, and he juiced himself. I didn't know he was doing that.
What?
You know?
Seriously, did he do that midway through the match?
Yeah. You didn't know. You didn't tell me in advance.
No. You know, I rammed him into the guardrail on the outside and he took the bump to the floor and he's rolling around. I slipped back in the ring. He comes up.
That's fucking brilliant, man. Yeah. That was amazing. Was there any other kind of highlights of your time in TNA where you know, obviously, did you work any big guys where you felt, well, this is something? Or again, was it just a matter of thinking about it after it happened and thinking it was pretty special?
Two specific periods I thought stood out for me. One was I wrestled AJ Styles for the TV title and beat him for that.
Right.
And, you know, over our careers, I probably wrestled AJ twice, maybe.
That's surprising. I thought it'd be more than that.
Yeah, so really excited to be able to do that on pay-per-view and obviously, you know, going over as well. That was special for me. And the other one was they gave me a 5-minute TV match with Kurt Angle, which I really wish they'd done something else with. But that was great.
Oh, you...
you know Grado, right? They talk about how wrestlers are good. Like, oh, he's a good wrestler. But from our point of view, until we get in the ring and actually wrestle these guys, we don't know if they're actually that good or if they're someone else is planning their match or if they're you know, they're just good at taking orders or if someone else is carrying them. But no, when I wrestled with Angle, even for those 5 minutes, you could tell he was exceptional. You know?
So many people say that, didn't they?
You just know straight away.
So I remember Big Drew working him and coming back and going, wow, he is incredible. Yeah. You know, that would have been a great match to see you and Kurt, you know, go for a proper pay-per-view. Time
yeah,
match, 15, you know what I mean?
20 minutes.
That would have been fucking brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah, well. How was Bischoff and Hogan when they came in? You were there, weren't you? How were they? Were they?
Yeah, I was the X Division champion. You know, I just won it. And they came in early 2010. I didn't have much interaction with them, really. I don't know why, I guess.
You don't have a couple of beers with Hogan or anything like that? No? Was there none of that?
No, it was more. I drank with Flair, went out with Flair a couple of times. But not with Hogan. They kept themselves to themselves, really. I kind of had interaction with Bischoff a bit because he did those gut check. He produced those gut check things they did.
Right.
He seemed to be the go-to guy when they were bringing someone in to do those. Like I wrestled Sam Shaw in one, and there's another young 18-year-old lad called Evan Macropoulos who I wrestled. You know, and they did that judging afterwards and whether they're going to give him a contract or whatever. But no, and the problem, you know, I don't say I had a problem really. I don't really know, but all the people who supported me in TNA were pretty much all gone by then.
Who was it? Who was the kind of people that had your back there, Doug?
Well, it was Terry Taylor, right. Jeff Jarrett, and Vince Russo, and you know those three were my main, you know, three people supporting me, and they all kind of left or got fired in quite short.
Do you know what? I hope you don't take this the wrong way, but it's surprising that somebody like Russo was that big on you, just because I could just imagine him seeing you as a wrestler. You know what I mean? You know he loves his cat. Know that I'm saying you're not a character, Doug, but...
To be fair, he didn't know what he'd do with me at first, and I think I proved myself in the British Invasion that I was able to carry that team and make it something. And then that gave him the confidence to try me out as X Division champion. And he said he had this idea about me, you know, being the anti-X Division guy, which I was fine with. And what was important to him is that I took whatever he gave me and I made it work.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Moan about it. I didn't try and change it. I didn't say, let's do this instead. I just went out there and I made the best of what he gave me. And that is why I was, you know, he liked me so much. From my point of view, I appreciated the fact he was giving me something to do. And it was something different to what I'd always done in my career of being a straight-up wrestler. Aye. You know, spicy. It's kind of fun to do
spicy.
Something.
Yeah. A bit spicy, mate. Do you think he gets some unfair criticism, Russell?
I think he gets unfair criticism in that I think people seem to think he does things for the wrong reason. I mean, I know that he was always trying to get everybody on the show because he knew that a lot of guys are only paid per show.
Oh,
so he'd always try and write segments which got as many people on TV at a time, just because he knew it helped out the boys. There's things like that that people don't read about or understand.
And that can be a big thing if you're on a contract where you only get paid per episode, and you could be flowing over there, and you're there for 4 days, and you might not get used until the last night, and you know even that could be cut off due to time, and then you don't get paid. You know what I mean? So it's a lot of fans forget that there's these kind of contracts out there, or at least they were out there.
Yeah, exactly. Right. But yeah, I don't specifically agree with his philosophy on booking a show or booking a TV show. But you know, that's up to them, and you know the management, and they decided that he'd be the writer, and that's fair enough. All my job is to, as a wrestler, is to do what's given to me and make the best of it and get myself over. You know.
What's your thoughts on the WWE UK? Has there been no approach for WWE for you to train? Because, I mean, you would seem like an absolute perfect guy to be at that performance centre and passing on knowledge, especially with the style of wrestling that they're doing, didn't there? Has there been none?
Not recently. I did have a few little back and forths last year, just after the World of Sport thing. But no, it hasn't been. I couldn't say why, really.
It's funny because I remember going down to watch Raw in 2006, and I'm sure you were in a dark match with Carlito. I remember that.
Oh yeah, in Manchester. Yeah.
Was that the only time you ever really worked with him, or was it? Is that the?
That's the only time I had a dark match. I've been at quite a few tapings as extra, you know, and scheduled to do other things. Although I never seemed to end up doing anything, which is good because he's still got paid.
Aye.
But yeah, that dark match with Carlito is the only WWE match I've had. Yeah.
So you're retired now, Doug. Is there anything that would get you back in the business? Is there anything that you can see that would you think? Oh, I would like to do that. You know, would it be maybe going over to work for All Elite?
Do you know fancy a wee jump into that NWA Power
ring?
That'd
be perfect for you.
Obviously, Nick Aldis is there. He's doing his thing, and I saw you on Twitter, Doug. Just recently, he had your wee eyes peeping at him.
I speak to Nick now and then, and he asked me his opinion of the first show. And, you know, I told him I enjoyed it. I thought it was great.
Yeah,
that'd be fun to get, you know, to go and help out there. Maybe agent produce a few of their matches if they, you know, a few of their shows if they start building up a bit and they start, you know, moving towards, a bigger run of shows and everything. I think it's a series, isn't it? Or they feel ongoing filming. I'm not sure.
I think they tape a whole load, didn't they? They tape loads in one block.
Right.
We'd love to see that. We'd love to see you in there. That would be great. Because nobody's ever retired, are they? I mean, Shawn Michaels, he retired, and then the Saudis came, didn't they? Exactly. And offered them a fortune, and he was back.
I don't know about in-ring. I do agenting and working, helping out. But
well, how important do you think that is on a show in Britain? Because I've seen you pop up and you're running backstage and you're producing, and it really does help when you've got somebody that's taking a note of the finishes and you know what people do in their matches to make sure something doesn't happen in the match before and nothing is ever repeated.
Yeah.
Is that something that you go out your way to try and get, you know, work?
No, I don't try. I don't go out my way to get it. I I'll do it if people want me to. I'll do it. Like, I work for a German Wrestling Federation in Berlin.
Aye.
Have you ever worked?
Is that
there?
The COW?
Yeah.
Is it that?
But they film it for the internet, so they do like a live streaming pay per view on the internet. You know, so that's pretty good. But I don't do anything in this country, really. I don't.
I'm always curious asking wrestlers this, right? Particularly when they've retired. Would you ever go to a wrestling show as a fan now and just watch it, just in the crowd?
Yeah, I'm tempted to do that a few times. But I could just see sitting there, you know, getting pissed off probably if I did that. Thinking, why am I here watching this? You know, I mean, I think I'd rather just go and watch a show in the West End.
But well, listen, Doug, thanks so much for coming on this show, because what I said earlier is absolutely true. There was a long period when I was into, you know, Japanese wrestling and stuff like that. Yeah. You were the scene, it felt like, for a long time here in the UK, you know what I mean? And it's an impressive thing to have done, man, to have done that for all the years, you know what I mean?
Right. And if there's any listeners to the show that doesn't know much about Doug, go back and watch his matches for LA Ring of Honor, his stuff in Japan. Just as second to none. Honestly, Doug, you're one of my favourite wrestlers of all time, and it's been good catching up with you, big man.
Thank you, mate. Thank you.
Thanks very much, mate.
Have a happy, healthy retirement, man. You've earned it.
Thank you, mate. Cheers.
See you later, man.
Cheers,
right. Thank you.
Thanks very much, mate. All right, catch you later.
Thank
on.
You great,
cheers, cheers, Doug. Thank you.
New time for your chance to win beer and our Beer 52 match of the week. Now, last week, our match as chosen by the wonderful Grado himself was Raven versus Jeff Jarrett for the NWA Heavyweight Championship from April 2003. There were a lot of run-ins in this match, and we asked the question, who was they involved?
Who was they?
Who didn't they run in? Gary McDonald said the Shockmaster. Adam said...
Was he definitely...
Well, I don't know.
Right, okay.
I don't know. Adam said Papa Shango, and Lyndon Sims says, I know that the world-famous trio... Chips, cheese, and doner meat. No, not involved.
They were still paying their dues.
Yep, I know that's because
they may be part of the ring that night.
No. He says on that night they were six man tagging with two pints of lager and a packet of crisps on Brighton Pier. True. That's funny, isn't it? That's good. I like that, London. In fact, fucking get the belt off that Stew Bro guy and get it to him.
Too late.
No, it's too late. Can't do that. The correct answer, however, of course, was Funaki.
As that was right, Funaki was not involved in that match. Yep. In Nashville that night.
So big congratulations to Gary Cassidy. You have won yourself a crate of Beer 52. That'll be flinging its way through your man's living room Monday as we speak.
So now we've got even more chances for you to win beer. We pick a classic wrestling match for you to watch, and all you have to do is answer a question on it. This week it's Rab's match, and everybody that gets the right answer they will put into a draw, and you can win this luscious beer from Korea. So Rab, what's your match to, and what's the question?
Well, we've had Doug Williams on the show, and we've been talking about the British style of wrestling. So my match this week is Arn Anderson versus Lord Steven Regal. 10/09/1993, find it on YouTube, and you will see Arn Anderson come out there and get in the ring with Steven Regal and work that British style that Regal loves so well. And Regal also loves a lot of good comedy as well, doesn't he? He loves comedy, Steven Regal. He loves British comedy, and he loves Ken Dodd.
He does.
And he loves all the end of the pier comedians, and he's some lad.
Salah Black, on it.
But I tell you something else, what a fucking wrestler he is. And look at Steven Regal's face in this match, by the way. Well, he sells how sore these moves are. And what I want you to do is I want you to watch this match, and I want you to let me know, how does this match end? What is the finish of this match?
All right. So winners must be over 18 and stay in the UK. So if you're listening for... Mount Kilimanjaro. It's not even a country, is it? It's a fucking mountain. then you can... then you can... right, come on. If you can... stay in the UK, you can enter. All you need to do is go to beer52.com/wrestling and we can sort you free beers as long as you cover the £4.95 for the postage. And as you're a wrestling daft listener... we'll give you two extra free beers in your first box. So that's a total of 10 free beers. Your first box will be sent to you next day and will contain beer for all your career. It's a monthly subscription service for beer and Beer 52. They don't hold you to ransom, so you can leave at any time. So just go to beer52.com/wrestling to get your first case of 10 beers for absolutely free.
Well, folks, listen, thanks so much for tuning in to another fantastic episode. I say tuning in, I'm just so old school for going, downloading streaming a new episode of Wrestling Daft. I want to say something before we go. Ooh. About Grado. Is what I want to say. Because let me tell you, this is one hard-working guy. This is an unbelievably hard-working guy. He's been working all day. He's in doing this podcast. He's been working all day, hard working, working all week, wrestling at the weekend. An incredible work ethic. Like, all joking aside, Grado, I just want the listeners to know the shift you're putting in today, this show, in your schedule, to fit this show in your schedule. It's easy for me. I'm just a guy that writes in his house. But you're a hard working guy and you're fitting this in. I want the fans to appreciate you.
I just feel sorry for the editors. I have to constantly edit me out because I'm just, my brain's that fried. I'm that knackered for just getting up at 7 bells every morning and got to do these panels. But do you know what? I love it. But see, when I'm no busy, that's, I hate that. I hate that.
Mate, your brain being fried is a fucking better brain than all these fucking other assholes' brains when they're at full capacity. Know what I mean?
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate that, Rap. And I did. I can't wait to. As I say, well, the panel season is going to be good. I'm hoping that some of the listeners for Wrestling Daft decide to come along to the panel and cheer me as I'm playing Geppetto at Pinocchio. Sorry, at the Pavilion. See what I mean, mate?
Right,
before
we go,
sorry.
I don't know if any of the listeners of the show know this, but I'm a WWE shareholder. Like,
genuinely. You told me that before, didn't you?
I'm a WWE shareholder. So a wee thing I would like to do at the end of the show, if you know.
How much money you made?
I'm not going to tell you exactly how much money I've made, but I'm going to go on the new and I'm going to tell you how the share price is doing and how my investment is doing.
Do you make money out of it?
I can go into my free trade app, the new. I'm not giving them any free business. Don't join with them because they're no sponsors or anything. Mm. Like, just wait until the day before we do this. I'm just going to go and check how my World Wrestling Entertainment investment has gone, and it's down 25.37%.
So if you lost money out of that, no?
I want you to remember that, right? See, listeners out there, see when you are trashing the WWE online and you're slagging off Seth Rollins and you're saying AEW is better than NXT, you're hitting Rab Florence right in the pocket. You're trashing the share price. So I want you to get behind Seth Rollins. Get behind him. Do you realise there's a fucking guy out there, right?
You've got Wayne's, mate.
There's a guy out there who's trying to make me money. There's a guy out there who comes out. They put a fucking red light on for him. They put a red light bulb on and he comes out holding a fucking plastic head. And he comes walking down there putting a graft in. He's a kind of fat guy, you know.
Aye, yes. Right?
Calls himself the Fiend and the Fiend is out there to buy my fucking wee lassie shoes. So when yous are slagging off the Fiend, right, for carrying out a big fucking rubber head for Tam Shepherds, you're hitting me in the pocket. Thanks for listening to the show. See yous next time.
Hey! Rob, I'm Herod!
It's yourself! Fuck you, Jim Cornette.
This is 4 Network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.